We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Well, it's a weird. It's you know, you talk about this whether they're us and them and stuff, and it reminds me of sort of a point that Rich Dolan made in his second UFO history volume, where it was like, you know, and he was talking about people with the knowledge of the UFOs, but this can be applied to the powers that be behind this whole New World Order thing. It's like, whether they're aliens or humans or whatever, they've formed a breakaway civilization where they don't see us as equals at all. And that's the, you know, we got a big problem there.
Exactly. And see, and that's what makes it a mockery of this whole thing of democracy. I mean, you know, well, Joseph Stalin pretty well nailed it when, I'm paraphrasing, but he says, I don't care how you vote, I only care about who counts the votes.
Right.
And that's where we are today, that with these computer voting machines and touch screens and stuff like that, which they have proven over and over again. In fact, state after state has decertified them and then turned around and taken them again. You know, they control the vote. So there is no vote. There is no democracy. We have no input. And money talks. And that's why Congress, who we look to be our protectors and to be our shield against an overbearing federal government, they've rolled over and played dead. They get elected, you know, by claiming all this great stuff, and then they get up there and they vote for the same old socialist claptrap.
Right, yeah. Right. Well,
and that doesn't mean that I'm opposed to all sorts of programs there. I mean, you know, Social Security was an idea that was a social program that was put on us. And yet, you know, I went all my life thinking that, wow, I'm contributing a little out of every dollar I make and goes into a fund. And when I get 65, I will have a little bit of retirement saved up and for my old age, you know. Well, you know, like Lucy and Charlie Brown, they pull the football away. When I hit 65, they said, no, you got to wait till you're 67. And now they're talking about moving it even further out because they have looted Social Security to try to pay for their misappropriation and their malfeasance on handling the rest of the budget. So now they've had to raid all these funds to try to pay off these debts that they continue to run up. And what's their solution? Run up more debt. Remember last summer when they were talking about raising the debt ceiling?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a huge thing going on, and oh man, you gotta do it or otherwise the government will go broke and nobody will get their checks and no, blah, 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 blah. So wait a minute. That's like telling me that my plumbing is broken and my house is full of wastewater. And what do I do? Do I pump it out or do I raise the ceiling so I can get more in? Gotta raise the ceiling. Oh, that's insane. No, you got to pump out the crapola, you know?
Right, right. Well, this economy...
No, they can't do that because they might lose a vote because they might, you know, somebody might not get their pork barrel project funded. It's insane. It's just insane.
Right, right. Well, you wonder if it's like, if we're going to enter into some kind of situation, like a world war or something like that. I guess if it's going to be like a history repeating type situation where we got out of the original depression through a war and then, you know, things kind of settled back into insanity of on the home front, if you will, if we're going to get
right
back into that. And, you know, like people always say that we're going to have to get used to a lower standard of living here and stuff like that. So you wonder if, you know, how America is going to get out of this mess, I guess.
I know. See, again, that's just idiotic thinking. You must get used to a lower standard of living. That's like my wife saying, well, you're not, you know, our bills are piling up and what do I say? Do I say, well, we just kind of have to get used to lower standard of living? Or do I say, well, I guess I'm going to have to go out and earn some more money?
Exactly, yeah.
my take has always been I got to go earn some more money somewhere.
Right.
Go make another talk. Get on somebody's radio show. I get so rich doing that. No offense, Tim.
Nah, I'm doing the best I can. The check's in the mail. Just keep waiting.
There you go. Just my credit's extended. No, but you see what I'm saying. You know, we need some straight thinking around here.
Yeah, but I just don't think, I mean, you do an amazing job in Trillion-Dollar Conspiracy, sort of what I thought was really compelling in that book was the sort of expose, if you will, on the educational system in the country and stuff. And I mean, that's enough to scare you,
too. Well,
they've
got us all dumbed down so that we don't even understand what's happening to us.
So it's not even like, you know, as frustrated as we are with the lemmings who don't know what's going on, it's like they're almost a sympathetic. We're a breakaway civilization too, because that's a sympathetic race of people that are so behind the times of reality that, you know, you just look at them and shake your head. I mean, you see them all the time, and you're just like, what are these people thinking?
Well, we can call them the Sergeant Schultz Brigade. Okay, I hear nothing, I see nothing, I don't want to know nothing. it's pretty amazing. And yet these people, in the Sergeant Schultz Brigade, when all of a sudden their government check is slow or non-existent, or the gasoline prices start go up to $5 a gallon or more, then they start writing, well, what's going on? Well, how can they do this? Well, blah, blah, blah. What's happening? You know, but they don't pay attention until it starts impacting them.
Right, exactly. That's the problem. You know, that they'll let their neighbor get sold out as long as they're all right for now. So it's like Nazi Germany. It goes back to that whole thing. You know, first they came for these folks, then they came for the others, and then it was too late.
That was Martin Niemöller.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a classic example. You don't say anything until they come for you, and then it's too late. And there's nobody to stand with you.
Right, right.
But you can't tell people that because, you know, they, until their ox gets gored, they don't want to pay attention.
Right. Then they think you're reactionary or you're a kook. And it's like
conspiracy theorist.
Right, right. But, you know, the people, I was talking and listening to people who were saying, you know, who were predicting the sort of sad state the economy's in, you know, way back before it happened and programs like this and other shows.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah, you've been on it for 7 years, so see, you've been right there with the roller coaster ride.
Yeah, so it's you know, at some point though, I almost feel at times that I just throw up my hands on sort of trying to. I mean, I'm always going to try and educate people on this through the program and stuff, but I guess trying to change the inexorable pace of this new world order, I just feel like, you know. I'm trying to stay to ride the wave, if you will, and see how this is all going to shake out.
Right. Well, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a bumpy ride. But don't give up.
Oh, never, never.
Nah, never give up. And because I'll tell you something, it's still the New World Order is still moving ahead, but I think it's slowed. I think they're having problems.
Well, you'd like to think as they get closer, maybe to the end game. Then there'll be some jockeying for position amongst them about who's going to be in charge of the New World Order, and that'll slow it down, maybe break down the plan, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in fact, that's definitely the case, Tim, because knowledge is indeed power. And right now, and up until now, they've had the knowledge. They know what their plan is, they know how they're making it work, and they know they've got their minions out there doing everything they order them to do, and most people have been just, you know, glued to the TV set and distracted and unconcerned. But as more and more people wake up, see, their plan won't work, okay?
Right.
Because they can't make us do stuff against our will. If we go along, that's our fault. If we don't go along, then they're stuck because they can't make us go along because there's more of us than there are of them. And so there's more and more people waking up. And, in fact, it's amazing. Of course, the problem is that they control the mass media.
Right.
So, a lot of people, I know so many people who are moving out of the cities, they're growing gardens, they're doing, they're bargaining and trading with their neighbors, and they're doing innovative energy things. They're doing all kinds of neat stuff. There's all kinds of neat stuff going on everywhere all across this country. But you're not going to see it on TV, okay? So most people see it, watch TV, and they think it's not going on. Even the ones who are working at it, they think, well, I guess I'm just kind of alone in this endeavor. But they're not. It's all over the place. But they don't know about it because they control the media. And if you just sit and watch the media, then you're living in one world, like you were talking about, and actually there's another whole world going on.
Right. That's the world we're in, and we're trying
yeah.
get people to wake up to all this. Now,
exactly.
I want to jump back a little bit to what, to sort of the beginning of our conversation, because I've always loved your stuff on UFOs. And, you know, as I said at the beginning, you know, I'm feeling kind of nostalgic, and we talked way back in the summer of 2005, and here we are nearly 7 years later, and the UFO phenomenon remains as perplexing and befuddling as ever. It hasn't changed at all, in a sense.
Yeah, that's true. It's just more of it.
What I find interesting, too, about that is that even when I first got into this almost a decade ago, it was like UFOs were still looked at in the mainstream as sort of exotic, in a sense. But now they almost feel a little commonplace, like they're being taken for granted, and I'm slow to say that because I'm trying to find the right words. Maybe you can understand what I mean.
Do you think perhaps that's because we've been involved in a conditioning process, and that conditioning process is working?
Mm.
Because I can go all the way back to the 50s, and in the 1950s, there were national polls taken, and like 95%, okay, of the people said there's no life outside the earth, you know, and that's all just nonsense. And today, it's quite the opposite. Today, 85-90% say, yeah, I think it's entirely possible that there's other folks out there in the universe, and we just haven't officially come into contact with them yet. So that's quite a turnaround in only about 50 years, you know.
Hmm.
And 50 years sounds like a long time, but having lived more than 50 years, I want to tell you, it just goes by real quick, even when you're doing it. And in the grand scheme of things, 50 years is just a drop in the bucket, right?
Right.
And so in this drop of the bucket, though, they have completely altered and turned around our concept of life in the universe. And today, you talk to young people, and you go, hey, what about aliens? Yeah, sure, okay.
Right, right. That's,
because
yeah.
they were brought up on Star Trek and Star Wars, and, you know, for them, it's just, oh, yeah, sure, okay. It's only some of the old fogies that are still going, oh, I don't know, I don't think there's anything out there.
Right, that's the weird part. You wonder where that's going to lead to. I've always sort of endorsed a generational idea that, you know, as those young people grow up, this is going to become more commonplace, and eventually
yeah.
maybe people are going to be like, well, why haven't we figured this out yet? I hope.
Well, I don't think it'll get to that question, Tim, because as the older folks die off and the younger folks take their positions in government, business, and you know, the mainstream world, it's going to be, yeah, aliens, sure, okay. I mean, it's like, what, you're questioning it? You think there's not something out there?
Right.
You know, it'll just be a shift of the paradigm. And again, you know, because like, there are these people who are fighting for disclosure. They want to have a press conference at the White House and with the President of the United States get up saying, okay, here's the real deal on UFOs. Well, I don't think it's going to happen. But what is happening and it will continue to happen is that more and more people just accept it until it becomes reality.
Right, right.
And then when you say, you know, there was a time when nobody believed that. What? they're going to look at that like we look at trepanning, you know, which is where they used to punch a hole with rocks in your skull to let out the evil spirits.
Oh, God.
You know, well, hey, don't laugh. That was cutting-edge medicine at the time. but then they got better, you know. Then they found leeches.
that was
cutting-edge medicine, you know. And today, oh, we've made real progress today. See, now we bombard you with radiation. Chemotherapy.
Oh, God.
Okay? And before long, people are going to look at that like they do trepanning and go, oh, my God. You mean people really did that to other people? Yeah, sure did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but when it does become that commonplace, there'll have to be a tipping point.
Well, we're kind of at the tipping point right now.
Yeah.
It's just, again, it's not officially acknowledged. Because, see, to officially acknowledge it would mean somebody with some authority would have to get up and say, okay, we've lied to you for 70 years. Now, do you really believe any politician is going to take that on? I don't think so.
Right. Plus, the follow-up line to that is we've lied to you for the last 50 years. Now here's the truth.
Yeah.
It's like, right. How are you supposed to believe it after
yeah,
that?
Yeah, trust me. I'm from the government. I'm here to tell you the truth. Yeah, right. Well, that's another thing I don't understand. I just don't understand. If the federal government of the United States was a individual, none of us would have anything to do with him.
Yeah.
Because he's a proven liar. And I don't mean just somebody makes a mistake or somebody that once or twice, you know, dissembled and said something that wasn't actually true. I'm talking about lies after lies compounded by lies on top of other lies. They're just liars. So, you know, why would anybody believe anything the government says is just beyond me.
It's scary. It's weird like that, you know. It's, you got no one else, though. It's like a codependent relationship.
I know. That's it. And that's why. Hey, and see, this is what they're working on. This is what this socialism is all about. They're trying to turn government into big mommy government. Okay,
yeah.
Like government's a parent, and the government allows us to do this, and the government allows us to do that, and the government rewards us when we do certain things, and punishes us when we do other things, and it makes decisions for us, and we'll take care of our health care and our food and nutrition needs and everything, and that's what they're working on. They want everybody dependent on the government, because then they got total control.
Right.
Because, I mean, if you're a child and your parents say, we're going here, do you have the right or even the means to say, no, I'm not going?
Right.
No, no, you're going to do what mommy and daddy say. And that's exactly, I'm glad you brought that up, because that hits the nail on the head. That's exactly what socialism's all about. To make everyone dependent on the government so that they cannot break away even if they want to.
My goodness. It's almost like America got away for a while but now it's being sucked back into this whole long-term agenda of just, you know.
Yep. And this is, I write about this in my new book. This is nothing new. This is,
right.
They've been trying to regain North America ever since the American Revolution. You know, a lot of people, well, they don't pay attention in school, and the schools aren't teaching anything any more anyway other than kind of feel good about yourself. But, of course, I often wonder, how good are you going to feel about yourself when you're 50 years old and you can't read or write very well, so all you can do is sell matches on the street corner. But anyway, they don't tell you about the War of 1812. That's when the British came back and sacked Washington and burned the Capitol, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't hear about that much. So 1812, they didn't give up. But then they got beaten back then, too. So they finally decided to use other methods, and so they decided to slip their agents from Europe into the United States and foment a revolution, which they did, okay? And I call it the war between the states. Most people know it as the Civil War, but there wasn't anything civil about it. And it was all a plot by the European bankers to split the United States in half and then let the North and South bleed each other dry. And then whatever was left, the British with their army in Canada would move in from the North. And where was the French army? Huh? It's in Mexico under Maximilian. And they would move up from the south, and the Europeans would regain North America. But that didn't work either, thank goodness. But see, people don't even understand what's happened to us in our history, so how can they understand what's happening to us now?
Right, right. Well, it reminds me of, you know, the rise of the Fourth Reich, in a sense, where you talk about how, you know, people don't realize that after the war, a lot of the high-powered Nazis just came to America and sort of, you know, took a lot of their social practices and implemented them on us.
That's right. Yeah, we beat the Germans in World War II, but we didn't beat the Nazis. We just forced them to move. And
right.
And a lot of them, thousands of them came over here. You know, now everybody knows that, you know, we got all their rocket scientists, von Braun, Dornberger, and all these other guys. But most people don't realize, because they haven't been told, that we got their mind control specialists, their psychiatrists, we got their chemical warfare experts, and we got their propagandists, and they brought them all over here and rolled them into our military-industrial complex, and they set about creating a Fourth Reich, and they've done a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's troubling. It's troubling in a lot of ways.
And the parallels are really uncanny.
Mm.
because the thing that put the Nazis into power was the burning of their parliament building, the Reichstag, and they blamed it on terrorists, even though now the evidence points to the fact that they did it themselves, and then blamed it on communist terrorists, and then implemented the Enabling Act, which was legislation which gave all the power to the leader, to the president, or in that case, the Führer, the leader. And then they started setting up camps, and they started outlawing private ownership of weapons, and they set up a homeland security, which was the Gestapo, to stifle any dissent and any anti-government sentiment. And holy cow, what about us? Well, we got 9/11, which many people claim was an inside job. They quickly rushed through the Patriot Act, just like the Enabling Act. They began to set up FEMA camps all over the country. They set up Homeland Security, which is now, you know, dominating everybody and consolidated all the police forces, which even J. Edgar Hoover in his time said, we don't want to do that. That's totalitarianism. But now we've done it. And the parallels are all there. We are the Fourth Reich. They just don't call it that. They call it, you know, patriotic America.
Well, the good thing is, you know, here we are bemoaning the fall of the American Empire, which is, seems to be happening. And, you know, if you look back at history, you know, you have the Roman Empire and the British Empire, right, and now the American Empire. I guess the hope is that even if there is a new world order, that empire will fall eventually, too. Maybe our grandkids will be lucky enough to be here for that. But, you know, maybe that'll happen, hopefully.
But that's part of the plan, Tim.
How so?
They want the American Empire to crumble.
No, I know that.
And that way, that will pave the way, because the American Empire, America, has been the thorn in the side of the New World Order. They cannot complete their world domination and their one world socialist system, with a free, independent, and armed America. So they're having to destroy America, and they're doing a pretty good job of it up till this point. And because once the American Empire crumbles, then everybody will be so disillusioned, and they'll go, well, we want peace, we want prosperity, and they'll go for whoever promises it. And the guys with the money will say, okay, well then, you know, here we go. And in fact, if you want to see the game plan, there was a British Fabian socialist named Eric Arthur Blair, who back in 1948, laid it all out, because he knew what the plan was, but he didn't want to use his real name, get in trouble, so he wrote under the pen name George Orwell. And of course, he transposed the numbers of 1948, and he titled his book 1984. And in there, he lays out exactly what the socialist plan is for the world, which was divide the whole world into three socialist blocks. In the book, it was Oceania, Asiana, and East Asiana. And in the real world of today, it's the European Union, the soon-to-be North American Union, and the future Asian Union. And then, because, see, they, you know, I differ with some of these people who say that they just want one world socialist government.
Right, that's what I was going to just say, yeah.
No, they don't really want that, because think about it, if you had one world government, then there's no tension. Hmm. There's no conflict. There's no stresses and competition and or enemies to point to give you the leverage for power and control. So they'll have these three sections, these three economic blocks, probably, maybe even four, because there's already a South American Union. And then they'll play them off against each other for maximum profit and control.
Yeah.
That's the game plan, and he lays it all out right there, right down to their imaginary enemy, Goldman.
Yeah.
Okay, and Goldman was behind everything, but they never could quite catch Goldman. Well, you know, Osama bin Laden was Goldman. Couldn't quite catch him, but he was always there, and he's always a menace, and you got to give up all your freedom so that we can combat Goldman.
Yeah, well, I've taken away my hope that the New World Order will crumble, because you're saying it'll probably just be a bunch of small little sections of all controlled really by the puppet masters at the top.
Absolutely.
You're not giving me much to hang my hat on here.
Well, they want to be in monolithic control, but they're not. Okay, so you know the plans fluctuate as the situation fluctuates.
You wonder if there's anybody on that on the inside who has any like affection for humanity at this point, or if they really are.
Well, or to expand that even a little bit, you know, if that's the evil cabal that's trying to control the world, where's the counterpart?
Right.
Where are the freedom fighters? Where's the underground? Where's the resistance?
Is that us?
You know, and it's us, I guess, but hey, we're fragmented. We don't know what to do. We ain't got any money. We're too busy trying to make a living. You know, all we want to do is be left alone and, so we're not all that effective. But yet, if we could all get together and just say no, and then it all come to a screeching halt. But that ain't going to happen until everybody gets wised up and becomes knowledgeable of what the situation is. And, I don't know when that's going to happen.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold your breath for that. That's the scary part, too, you know.
Exactly.
Well, a good sign that this is completely off the beaten path in a sense, because it goes back to the UFO thing, is it's interesting that, you know, as you've established here in our conversation, and it's pretty well, you know, I think a lot of people in the UFO community would agree, this thing goes back eons. It's interesting that, you know, at least here in the tiny amount of time that we've been looking at it, that now at least you don't hear about like ufologists of the 1700s or 1800s, but now it's become a thing at least. You know, people are at least looking at that finally.
Well, you know, I think there's a reason for that actually, because if you were in the 1700s and you knew nothing about flight, there was no such thing. Nobody, man can't fly.
Yeah.
There's nothing up there but birds and clouds, you know. But you saw something up there, and it was zooming around. What context could you put it in? You couldn't.
Right.
You might write about, I saw a demon, or you might say, you know, I saw a vision of God, or something like that, but you didn't have a context. It's only been within the, starting in the 20s and the 30s and particularly the 40s and 50s that we had the technology to be able to say, hey, there's an unidentified flying object. We know there's something up there and it's flying around, but we don't know what it is. So at least we had a context for putting it in.
Right, right. That's true. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's at least, like I said, at least, people are collecting the evidence now and not just painting them in paintings or putting them on, what I mean? It's good in that sense.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, you know, the issue has evolved from, you know, is there anything there to, hey, you know, what kind of propulsion system are they using?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, what is this thing? What's going on?
In fact, see, I've lived all through that little evolution. Back in the 50s, the big burning question was, hey, do they come from Mars or do they come from Venus?
Yeah.
And then we get into the 60s and the 70s, 80s, and the question, you know, got a little more sophisticated. It became, well, do they come from Alpha Centauri or do they come from Zeta Reticula 4? And now today, we're even more sophisticated. Now people are asking, well, do they come from another dimension? Could they be coming from another time, another galaxy? And frankly, I think the answer is yes.
Yeah.
All of the above.
Right, right. Well, it'll be interesting to see, because it does seem like I've made the analogy to someone recently that, you know, UFOs, for me, as someone who's interested in the subject and everything, I kind of look at them now as almost like an ex-girlfriend. Like, we had a lot of great times, but they haven't done much for me lately.
But again, I think that's part of the conditioning process. Because early on, well, we'll take you as an example, you old example, you. When you first got interested in UFOs, it was exciting and a new feel and something that you could get really kind of enthusiastic about and lay awake at night pondering what are they, where they come from, where they do it. But, you know, after time, well, what is it? Familiarity breeds contempt.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, after a while, it's like, yeah, okay, what else is new? You know, or like you said, what have you done for me today? All right? And so I think that's part of it, because you've just about explored it to the limits of what we can find out to the best of our abilities today, okay? But now it doesn't mean you know everything about it. There's still plenty more to go, but we just don't have access to the information.
Well, that's the weird part, too. I mean, we talk about how at least now we're looking at it, but then we've got like a collective 50-year history of looking at this thing. And right. At the end of the day, we really, for the mainstream, let's say, we haven't even proven the fundamental question of are UFOs real, even though I think everybody in ufology agrees that they're real.
Well, I think even people outside ufology.
Yeah.
I think they realize that they're real.
But you know what I mean. I mean, we haven't turned over the page.
Yeah.
And that's scary.
We now know it's not a psychosis, and we now know it's not hallucinations. That was big arguments
back in
the 50s and 60s. And we now know that's not true. So I think even the most ardent skeptic would agree that they're real. There's something there. Now the argument breaks down as to
what they are.
Where are they? You know, and the skeptics and the debunkers would say, well, they're just misidentified aircraft, okay, or secret government test craft. And, of course, they can't explain very, very competent UFO sightings and reports from, say, the Aurora case in 1897, which was 6 years before the Wright brothers ever proved that heavier-than-air machines could fly. So, you know, what was that all about? Well, they can't explain that, but still their argument is they're explainable, you know. So basically they're not arguing are they real, they're just arguing over are they extraterrestrial or not.
Yeah.
And you know, I think we'd have to agree, Tim, that we can't really prove that to everyone's satisfaction at this point.
Right, right. That's the frustrating part. Like I said, I mean, we've been at this collectively as a research community for like 50 years, and we haven't really gotten to the bottom of anything. That's the frustrating part of it. But it keeps me going. I mean, I'm not bemoaning it entirely. I'm just saying.
Well, and that should prove that this is quite a mysterious subject.
Exactly.
The fact that 50 years of scrutiny and we still don't seem to be any closer to any firm answers.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point. Like, people should, that should be a rallying cry of the mainstream, if you will. I keep waiting for that day when there's sort of a turnaround where people are like, you know, maybe it'll happen on the Roswell 75th or something, where people are like, hey, let's look at this again. Like, we totally dropped the ball as a society on this phenomenon.
Oh, but wait a minute, Tim. You mean you're waiting on the mass of people to start thinking? Oh, brother, please, don't hold your breath.
yeah, I know. Well, it's all I have really to hope for.
Yeah, that's true. No, but there's still plenty of stuff going on, and there's still plenty of incidents happening. And again, I think to me, of course, maybe it's because I just finished this new book and just finished, you know, about a year or more of heavy research, is that I think there's all new ground to be broken, not by looking to the future or looking into space, but looking back at our own history.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is so many wild and woody things that are here, and there's evidence, there's skulls, there's artifacts, there's drawings, there's text, there's carvings, statues, there's so much stuff right here on this earth that points the way, and yet we have, for the most part, ignored all that.
Well, beyond ignored, it's amazing, too, that, you know, that we've lost that knowledge as a race. You know?
There's a reason for that, too.
Absolutely, yeah. They don't want us to know that stuff.
Exactly. As I detail and document in my new book, going back to around the turn of the 20th century, you find that archaeology and anthropology and a lot of these apologies were taken over and controlled by the wealthy elite through their foundations, their grant giving, and their grants and their donations to universities. And if you wanted to go study something they didn't want you to look at, then you didn't get any grant money.
Yeah.
And as long as you were content to only extend existing scientific knowledge by another half inch, well, you might get some funding. And if you mind your P's and Q's and didn't really raise too many questions, then you get to be a tenured professor. And if you continue to just, you know, stay on the party line, then you get to retirement and you'd have a nice life, and maybe even with some awards and with some nice degrees and things like that. But of course, if you said, but hey, wait a minute, what about this over here? Well, then you're out. You're out the door.
Yeah.
And you're a citizen lay anthropologist, which means, well, you don't have any credentials. You don't know what you're talking about.
It's amazing that that whole idea of, like, you know, the rugged individualism and the American spirit's really been beaten out of the society in a way. You
exactly.
don't see Teslas anymore. You don't see, you know, the Wright brothers wouldn't get the time of day nowadays.
Thomas Edison decided, wouldn't it be nice if I had something other than this candle to read by? So he goes out in the garage, he invents a light bulb.
Right.
You know, he didn't have a little string of degrees. He wasn't known as any particular expert. Yeah, and as you mentioned, same thing with the Wright brothers. They built bicycles. But they had an idea, and they started working at it. But see, today, that's all been squeezed out of us. First off, we've been squeezed into education. You got to go through public schools where you get conditioned to sit quietly in your chair and regurgitate whatever the teacher tells you. And if you try to think for yourself, then you probably have ADHD or something.
Yeah, get them on some pills, yeah.
Get them on Prozac. And then, so if you mind your P's and Q's, and then you get into college, and let's say you want to go into physics, okay? So, wow, boy, they put you in the physics department. And if you try to buck the system and say, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense, or hey, I got a better idea, well, then, you know, you're constantly in trouble, and you don't get to be a teaching fellow. And then you, if you're not a teaching fellow, then you don't get to be a professor. And, you know, if you still raise questions, you don't get to be a tenured professor. So, and then if you decide to leave academics, then the only place you can go being a physicist would be to go work for the government or a large physics corporation, and they stick you in a lab and make you sign non-disclosure agreements and agreements that say if you come up with anything that might be patentable, then it belongs to them, not to you. So number one, you have no incentive to invent anything. And number two, if you do invent something, then they've got it. And if it would create a problem to the existing monopolies, then they lock it away and suppress it. That's the way it works, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And people just don't really understand this. They're still watch TV, so they think, oh, well, you know, if I could simply invent a better mousetrap, I'll make $1 million. No, because what you do is you invent the better mousetrap, and then the first thing you do is you run to the patent office, which has long-standing documented links to U.S. intelligence agencies, and they take a look at it and say, holy cow, Tim's invented a better mousetrap. So they slap a national security label on it, and it's suppressed, and you're left with your hand on your butt, and the public doesn't get it. That's how that works, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like I said, it's really frustrating to understand how things work and nobody else does.
Right, exactly.
Because they watch TV.
Yeah, we try to, you know, I guess that's all we can do is to try to, you know, get more people on the same page as us and try and get them to wake up, because it's just scary how many people just aren't.
Right.
You know, here I have been talking to you for 7 years and things haven't improved really for, you know, the quality of life, I think, has gotten worse for people, you know, because stress of everything. We're living in, I mean, I thought it was stressful back in 2005. I mean, shit, we're really
it's worse
stressed.
Worse now, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yet, I don't know. It's maybe it's my imagination, but in 2005, did we have more room to talk about it?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, do you feel like in 2005 we actually were able to more openly discuss and talk and criticize about what was going on?
I think luckily that hasn't changed too much, I don't think, unless you see it.
Still raise Cain. Hey, you and I are still here, and we're still saying the same stuff.
Absolutely.
It's been being proven more and more true.
and we keep having more stuff to talk about, because more stuff keeps happening to us as a people, which is, you know, at some point people are going to have to wake up and realize what's going on, but, you know, it's amazing.
Well, I tell you what, if they do, they're going to be really shaken to their core, because I think I previously mentioned this Obama executive order over natural resources. Guess who, under this order, which is on the White House website, this is not some conspiracy theory. This is what he has signed in this executive order. Guess who's going to be in charge of all our water resources? In other words, all our water, your rain barrel, the water off your roof, the water in your stock tank, the water coming down the stream, the water in the river. Guess who's in charge of all, under this executive order, who's going to be in charge of all the water resources?
The government.
The Secretary of Defense.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Leon Panetta. Okay. Now, Leon Panetta, who goes to Afghanistan and forces the Marines around him to disarm in a combat zone, I guess because he's so afraid of his own troops. Are we in an incredible situation or what? This is really indeed 2012 as we feared and conjectured about it, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And yet, here it is, it's happening, and it's like, yeah, okay, well, that happened today, well, okay. Just nobody is really taking it into context. But can you imagine that? A Secretary of Defense goes to a foreign combat area in a combat zone and then makes Marines leave their weapons outside. I know when I was in the Army, one of the things they taught you, drilled into your head, is you never leave your weapon anywhere. You keep it with you at all times, particularly in a combat zone.
Right, right. It just brings up this whole, stormtrooper idea. Scary.
Exactly.
In that sense, you know. They just don't think for themselves in a sense either. It's
I was just following my orders?
Well, I'm excited for this new book because, as I said, I'm thrilled that you're going back into the realm of UFOs because there's so much there, and I feel like that may be a big key to understanding a lot of this stuff.
I think it is, and I think that's why basically the new book, Our Culture to History, kind of ties the UFO issue into the ancient astronaut issue, which makes for an interesting debate, an interesting conversation.
Yeah, because it's interesting because it's remarkable that there's people in the UFO community that don't. You'd think UFO community and the ancient astronaut theorists would sort of like get together, and some of them have, but it's still a divisive issue, and you'd think it's surprising that it is.
It is. But then that's how you keep people, you know, it's the old divide and conquer. You got to keep people divided because when people get together, they're unstoppable. And that's why I'm saying if everybody in this country simply understood what was really going on and the dangers and the pitfalls that are awaiting us, and they all got together and said, okay, look, forget race, color, religion, national origin, liberal, conservative, forget all that. We're Americans, and we're for freedom. And I'll stand for your freedom if you'll stand for my freedom. And then we all just stand up and say, no, we're going to be free, liberty-loving Americans. We could turn it all around because there's more of us than there are of them. But it's never going to happen as long as people watch TV and stay divided and conflicted over petty issues.
Right, right. Well, the media, they always, you know, seems like their job is to divide the nation. That's the unfortunate part, you know. No one's out there trying to unite anymore.
No.
Well, on that depressing note.
No. Let's leave it on an upbeat note.
Yeah, what do you
think? More of us than are of them. Things are looking up. Things are changing. And we still have an opportunity. If everybody go down, vote for Ron Paul. whether you like him or not, at least it's sending a message that we're tired of the same old, and we want something new. And then when he doesn't get elected, then it'll be plain and obvious that the votes are controlled, and we'll know what the situation is, and then we can just deal with it from there.
Yeah, let's hope so. Like I said earlier, you know, you hope this Ron Paul phenomenon will wake a lot of people up, because you'd think the Obama thing would, and that didn't. Now they're pinning their hopes to another guy, and that's a whole stack deck. So
it is, and there's nothing there. Just another, you know, except for Ron Paul, we've just got a nice selection of empty suits to choose from.
Right, right. We never know the people behind the scenes that are pulling the strings.
That's right.
That's always how it goes down.
Tim, I appreciate you talking with me, and here's hoping for a better tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. Let me thank you just for coming on the program and helping us kick off another season. As I said, I consider you a mentor and a friend, and, you know, I couldn't start a new season of the program without you. So it's been a great conversation.
You. Okay, I look forward to next year, and we'll see what we talk about then.
Absolutely. Have a good one, pal.
Okay. Bye-bye.
that does it for the season premiere of BOA Audio Season 7. Big, big thanks to the legendary Jim Mars for returning to the program and helping us kick off yet another season of the program. Check out his website, www.jimmars.com. And if you are not familiar with all of the amazing books in the Jim Mars milieu, go out and pick them up, my friends. They are tremendous. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio Listener Feedback. And in keeping with the way we usually do things here on the critical episodes of the program, we'll eschew classic listener feedback to give you an update on where things stand here with BOA Audio as we begin Season 7. I believe I teased a lot of this at the end of the baseball special, but the gist of it is we've spent the last 2 months cultivating some tremendous conversations. I cannot wait to roll them out on all you folks out there. This conversation you just heard with Jim Mars was just one of 8 episodes we have recorded, so we have got a ton of stuff in the pipeline here at BOA. And given how crazy it was during Season 6 with the interminable delays that just drove me crazy and drove the listeners crazy, I've really tried to focus in on scheduling here for Season 7. So going into the beginning of the season, I have tried to keep the focus here on getting an episode out to everybody once every 10 days. We're not going to be weekly. We're not going to be bi-weekly either. We're going to be every 10 days. That's the goal here for Season 7. I really hope I can live up to that. So far, so good. I think I'm getting this episode out to people actually a day early. If I was going to tease you with content of these mysterious taped episodes, I would say 3 things kind of come up throughout the course of all these. International stuff, crypto stuff, and conspiracy stuff. So you're going to hear a lot of that. We're going to mix in some other topics along the way. Don't worry, but those are sort of the big themes that emerged as I was taping these preliminary episodes for Season 7. And if you want some additional good news, I guess, I can tell you that beyond this season premiere here with Jim Mars, which is clocked in at a tidy 90 minutes, all of the remaining episodes so far that we have in the can, so the next 7 editions of the program, will be 2-hour conversations plus. We just burned the clocks throughout taping these programs, folks. Just went as long as we really felt like we wanted to, all the guests. So it was just tremendous, this process, if you will. So I cannot wait for people to hear these programs. They are just in-depth and really thought-provoking stuff. I'm not going to just drop names here on who you're going to be hearing, but I think the really diligent, hardcore listeners can probably put together a handful of the guests so far, because I've dropped their names in the baseball special and in this conversation with Jim about people I'd recently talked to. So you get an idea of who you may be hearing in the future here on Season 7. It's kind of like Lost. We're dropping little clues along the way for people to figure out the mysteries. And I don't know, I think that's it on listener feedback and update on the season. Pretty simple. Look for 1 new episode every 10 days. Cryptids, conspiracies, and international stuff coming your way in the next few weeks. And it's fantastic to be back. I'm psyched, and I cannot wait for all the folks out there to hear these interviews. They are amazing, and I cannot wait to keep doing them and taping more and more really strange and off-the-wall stuff. Now that my back is not against the scheduling wall, and we've got a fresh new season looking out at us. We'll bring back the listener feedback starting next episode. The ways to get in touch with me are simple. You can write to boaaudio@hotmail.com or go to the website and click the contact button. Final method, of course, is to join up at the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. It is BOA's paranormal playground. Lots of talk about the esoteric as well as pop culture going on at the US of E. And, of course, I'm on Twitter and Facebook, so just punch in Binall, B-I-N-N-A-L-L, and you'll find me. Feel free to befriend me, follow me, or poke me. I'd be happy to have you as part of my online circle of friends. Up next, of course, please allow me to thank the esteemed and infamous BOA staff. Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Richard Thomas, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrell, and our webmaster, Jeremy Boston. I just got off the phone with Jeremy a couple days ago. We've got some really cool stuff happening at Banal of America that we're working on. It's so close. I wish we had gotten it done in time to launch Season 7, but a lot of the little bugs are still kind of sniggling about, if you will, on this refurbishment of BOA. But when it comes along, trust me, it's going to be a whole new paradigm shift for the website in a good way. We're not going premium or anything crazy like that. It's just a completely different layout and design and will allow for so much more at BOA. Meanwhile, in my absence, the BOA staff has been putting out some tremendous stuff. So head on over to the website and read their columns that have been posted since the last time you heard from me. There's far too many for me to mention. There's text interviews. There's all kinds of discussion on weird stuff like Alcatraz and ghosts, green children and skeptics, skinwalkers and orbs, and a really strange story about enlightenment. And that's just a brief perusal on my part looking at the front page at BOA. So get on over there and read some of these columns. They're amazing, my friends. If you're only listening to BOA audio and you're not reading the offerings from the BOA staff, then you're only getting half of the story. Banal of America, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. Make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. Up next comes the time in the program where I take my hat off and pass it around to the audience and ask you to make a donation to BOA and the Banal of America audio franchise. But of course, it is just the first episode in Season 7, so you're probably sitting back wondering, well, let's see what you have to offer, Banal. And I understand that perspective. Maybe in a couple episodes, your tune will change when you hear some of these conversations that are in the pipeline. Nonetheless, if you're a longtime listener of the program and you're psyched to hear us back and you want to make a donation right off the bat to kick off Season 7, there are two ways to do that. You can head on over to banalofamerica.com and click the PayPal button. That's easy to find. It's on the left-hand side of your screen. That'll take you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It is safe and secure. But if you don't trust the internet and you want to make a donation via snail mail, you can write to Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. And you can find that address right there at Banal of America underneath the PayPal button. If you do send in a snail mail donation, please make it payable to Tim Banal and not Banal of America, since my bank is anal and they will not cash those donations. And if you send us something, please be sure to include some return correspondence method so I can get back in touch with you and thank you for reaching out to BOA. As always, no donation is too small and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio to help keep the franchise up and running, commercial free, and freely available for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. On the next edition of BOA Audio coming at you on May 10th, keep your fingers crossed, our guest will be Roland Watson, the man behind the book The Water Horses of Loch Ness, and we'll be having an in-depth conversation on another icon of the esoteric, as we'll be exploring the infamous and enigmatic Loch Ness Monster. I put this one right up there with the spontaneous human combustion episode, folks. This is a program I've wanted to do for such a long time. We're finally going in search of Nessie, my friends, and we spent a long time talking about the Loch Ness Monster and exploring it from so many different angles. It's a tremendous interview. You're going to find out just tons of stuff. You're going to find out about sort of the evolution of the Loch Ness Monster phenomenon. You're going to hear about all the different means and methods that have been used to try and prove its existence. You're going to hear about the ebbs and flows in popularity for the Loch Ness Monster and how the public perception of it has changed tremendously over the years to where it is today. And along those lines, we'll learn about the latest in Loch Ness Monster research, as well as Roland's thoughts on all the various Loch Ness Monster theories, such as the ancient dinosaur theory, the Nessie is dead theory, and a whole bunch more different reasons given for the Loch Ness Monster mystery. Really, this episode could kind of be summed up in a really cheesy quote, in the sense that you could say this conversation is everything I've always wanted to know about the Loch Ness Monster, but never had the chance to ask. Well, I finally did here when I sat down with Roland Watson and just peppered him with a myriad of questions about Nessie. You will learn a lot about the Loch Ness Monster next time on BOA Audio as we welcome Roland Watson. That's all coming at you next time on BOA Audio. As I said, May 10th, cross your fingers, we're really hoping to get it to you on that date. And on that note, we close the book on the season premiere of BOA Audio Season 7. Big, big thanks to Jim Morris for coming back on the program. Big thanks to all you great folks out there. You are just tremendous. I have been hearing from so many people in the last 2 months asking about Season 7, wanting to know about the next series from Banal of America, sending in your guest thoughts, sending in your takes on different aspects of Season 6. It's just been amazing hearing from all you guys out there. And now we're back. The journey begins again for all of us folks, and it's going to be an awesome, awesome ride. Thank you once again for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.